Ideas, bringing you a live debate between the candidates for the Illinois House and the 105th District. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The election is just under a month away. Joining us at University Galleries in Uptown Normal are the candidates, incumbent Republican Representative Dan Brady and challenger Democrat Ben Webb. Also joining us for this live broadcast is our audience. Thanks to everyone for attending this forum. This debate will feature questions developed by GLT News and with public input from those submitted at WGLT.org. There will also be time for opening and closing statements and for responses by the opposing candidates. This forum is co-sponsored by the McLean County League of Women Voters, and the League's Phyllis Versteeg and Anita Carney are serving as our timekeepers. We determine the order by drawing numbers with the lowest number going first, and after that we'll rotate among the candidates. We'll ask as many questions as time permits during this debate. That brings us to our opening statement by Ben Webb, who drew the lowest number. You have 2 minutes for your opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Schlenker, and thank you to WGLT and League of Women Voters for hosting this forum. Again, my name is Ben Webb, and I'm a high school English teacher in Normal, working to earn your vote this November. I grew up in Rockford, Illinois, in a close-knit family, and after college, my wife and I chose Bloomington Normal to be our home and the place that we start a family. As a teacher, politics was never what I studied in school, but as many of us have learned, politics is not a sideline or a spectator sport that you can just allow to run unchecked. As the political atmosphere has become more polarized, divided, and dysfunctional in our state, I found our state's gridlock and politics over people mantra to hold up as a disastrous status quo, one that is frankly problematic. Problematic because it's created an over 700-day budget impasse that will take years to recover from. Problematic because of the values that we are showing a younger generation as our Illinois politics at its best. And problematic because of the turmoil that it's put our university systems through. I think it's time for a change. I believe that it is time to turn away from business as usual in the status quo and start to see an institution that delivers on the promises made to its constituency. That is why I'm running to deliver progressive values, the values of a working class which believes in a graduated and fair tax, which ensures that the wealthiest residents of our state pay their fair share rather than placing the tax burden on the 98% just trying to make ends meet. I believe in property tax relief, full and equitable funding for public schools as an investment in our state's future and the workforce, and much-needed infrastructure improvements which signal to outsiders that Illinois is a valuable place to come to school, to call home, and to do business within. I believe that in unchecked incumbency breeds stagnation, and instead I am pleased to join the many that are going to the polls this November and for the first time in a long time seeing two names to choose from in this 105th district. I'm very proud to be a part of this process, and I look forward to tonight's discussion.
Representative Dan Brady, your opening statement.
Thank you very much, and good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to have this forum, and thank you to all who have helped host it, especially WGLT, the League of Women Voters, and Illinois State University Galleries. To be successful as a candidate for state representative, let alone to serve as state representative, requires the support of family. And I wish to thank my wife, Terry, daughter, Danielle, and son, Tom, and all my family and friends who have and continue to support me. I was born and raised in Bloomington, attended grade school and high school here, received my associate's degree from Southern University of Carbondale, and my bachelor's from St. Ambrose University in Davenport, Iowa. I've been involved and served our community in a number of ways, from boards and commissions to fraternal clubs, school boards, volunteer projects, and service as a county elected official. From private business to public service, it has always been about service to people for me. I know it won't come as a shock when I say there are many challenges in state government. There's the frustration of partisan politics, the financial issues surrounding our budget, education funding, and, of course, the daunting pension debt. But I want to tell you why you should return me to represent you in Springfield. There are three main reasons. First, the projects we have accomplished in the 105th District. Second, the legislation I have passed not only for the 105th District, but the entire state. And third, what I have accomplished for you, the people in the 105th District, as I provide constituent services. I believe to be a effective elected representative, you have to do more than talk policy. You have to know and get to know the people you represent. From Gridley to Strawn, Fairbury to Towanda, Cropsey to Cooksville, Hudson to Bloomington Normal. You have to listen, meet with, and make yourself available to the people. And above all, you have to be accessible and visible when the elections are over. You need to remember the people who put you in office to serve them. Thank you for the opportunity. I look forward to our discussion.
You're listening to a special Sound Ideas and a 105th District State House debate live from University Galleries in Uptown. Ideas for questions for tonight's forum were submitted at WGLT.org. As agreed, each candidate will have up to 90 seconds to answer questions with one-minute responses if desired. After each candidate has had an opportunity to answer the initial question, follow-up questions from me carry a 30-second time limit. State spending has grown at a faster rate than state revenue since 1994. Even after the tax increase passed, there remains a structural deficit baked into our needs for spending on pensions, Medicaid, K-12 education, and other mandated or highly desirable spending. How should the state fix that deficit? What proportion or mix of funding do you find preferable? Representative Brady, you are first.
Thank you, Charlie. Or first off, I think to your question, you have to look at the priorities. And what the priorities of the state are. The priorities of the state should be public education, public infrastructure, and public safety. And those are priorities that over the years have given way to many, many other things where important tax dollars have been directed to. And that has to stop. So we have to get back to those priorities. And those are the priorities that I think is responsible as state government dictates through our Constitution. As far as public education in particular, in public higher education, those are main responsibilities for state government. Where we have over the years directed a number of dollars through the state budget with spending that doesn't match our revenue, it has to stop, and it has not stopped for approximately the last 14 to 15 years. And so the priorities are where we need to get back to.
Ben Webb.
Thank you. I would say part of the revenue that needs to be generated, we need to change our tax system. And right now we have a flat tax, which is mandated by our Constitution. And I know that I've been talking to people across this area who are asking for a progressive and a fair and graduated tax, one that makes sure that the wealthiest 2% are in fact paying their fair share rather than the tax burden coming down on the 98% working and middle class. In terms of higher education spending, we are at Illinois State University, which is one of the lowest funding in terms of President Dietz's graduation speeches that he was able to give to us this past summer. We're at 45% lower than the state average, and we need to adjust the funding formula with that. With higher education, with K-12 education, these are priorities that we need to fund, and that's going to require a change in our revenue maker. And so we see how a progressive tax, as proposed by the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, which says we can get a $2 billion revenue boost by just asking the wealthy 2% to pay their fair share. And that is comparable when you look at other states. If we were to adopt overnight Iowa's tax bracket system, that would be a change in $7.3 billion in new revenue coming into our state. And so it's not that we have the most regressive state local tax systems in the United States. It's also that we need to address the fact that the taxes are not equal across the playing field. And when it comes down to it, we need to make sure that those at the top are paying their fair share.
Representative Brady, do you want a response?
Yes. When you go back to the taxpayers and you ask again first the idea of progressive tax and what would have to be done from constitutional amendment there, I think people should stop and ask themselves, what am I going to pay more money for through a tax? And where am I going to get the guarantee that those priorities I just mentioned earlier are going to be followed? Because they haven't been in the last several years, as I indicated to you earlier. And so if you're willing just to open up your pockets and say that so far, under the present direction in the last 14 years of the General Assembly and the makeup of the majority party, that things have been good, then I'll be glad to pay more taxes. But I happen to believe, and many people that I talk to happen to believe, before you ask me for more, you show me what you can do with what you have and the priorities in which you're supposed to be spending the money for.
Ben Webb?
Well, one thing to add into that is that proposal actually would lower taxes on working middle classes. And so with a tiered system, it is not tying our hands to the flat tax system, where the only option is to either tax pensions or to raise income taxes across the board. And so I know there's going to be a little bit of disagreement on whether or not you can do more with less, but I think untying us us from that system is the best move forward, and we can actually make some major changes.
The next question is, how do you think the public pension underfunding issue that has accumulated over several decades should be addressed? And Ben Webb, you are first.
Just to mention, we are at a $25 billion current pension liability. And so this is something that is a long-standing issue in the State House. And part of the challenge is that it's going to take years to repair this. And the obligation per Illinois resident right now is $12,000. And so this is a promise that was made to state workers, to unions, and it's a promise that must be kept because the problem wasn't done by those taxpayers. The problem was the General Assembly moving money and not paying their fair share of their bills. And so I think when it comes down to addressing the pensions in terms of how we actually are fully funding those pensions and paying ahead of schedule, and actually paying a little bit more, that's where we start to address the fact that you're going to have to curb the steep increase and the rise in the pension liability as we have an aging population and hopefully a growing population as we start to see Illinois be put right back on track. That same study with the CTBA talks that if you actually put in $2.4 billion into that fund, you will start to, over the course of 8 years, be allowed to move those monies on a gradually decaying scale over the span of 8 years. And that eighth year, that $2.4 billion can go towards property tax relief. And so there are proposals that are being put forward to fix the problem. We just either need to check our math or take a stand and make that change.
Dan Brady, how to fix the pension issue.
Charlie, first off, whatever we do and some of the plans that have been proposed and legislative-wise have actually been passed by both chambers and sometimes with bipartisan support, has to meet the muster of the state Supreme Court. And some of the health care proposals in particular did not. And so we know for our retirees that those pensions are protected and are protected by the Constitution. What we have to look at is programs and ideas in which we're going to relieve that debt. The money that we have in Springfield, we have to have dedicated percentages to the pension system. In the last 3 years, the pension systems have been fully funded. That's good news. What we have to do is continue that process, and we can do that by offering things such as buyouts, individuals from free choice ideas of what they want to do possibly with the future of their pensions. There's several other proposals that are forthcoming, and there's no doubt that we have to continue to make sure we fund those pensions and that those that have paid in, that their particular pension and what they're due and owed, as we agree as Democrats and Republicans, is what they are entitled to get.
Ben Webb, do you want a response?
Just to add in, I think it's also speaking to how we're going to need other forms of revenue right now. In terms of looking at other ways we can cut corners or bring in new pieces of revenue, we need to look at this LaSalle Street tax in terms of there's $200 million that could come in by closing corporate loopholes, looking at the legalization of marijuana for recreational use. That's another possible $700 million. And when we look at what we should be providing to our state employees, these promises need to be upheld. And I think that when we get to negotiations, you're going to need somebody who is in the corner and has the back of unions. I'm happy to be endorsed by AFL-CIO, as well as a number of other unions who need a seat at the table. And so I think that's part of mending this problem.
Dan Brady, your turn for a response.
Well, I think that Ben has the luxury of seeing things one way. I have the challenge of seeing things in a variety of ways and trying to represent a variety of people. What may be good for one and the vision that a group may have or association may have is not possibly the same way someone else sees it. So the negotiation side of things are extremely important. And being an individual who has worked in particular in workers' compensation reform with both sides of the aisle and trying to find the common ground is what we need to do when it comes to pensions. But to think it's going to be all one way for a certain group, organization, or association, it can't be that way. With the pensions, one thing has definitely occurred over the years. The finger-pointing has stopped, and the stakeholders understand the magnitude of the problem requires all of us at the table.
This is GLT Sound Ideas and a debate between the candidates for the 105th State House seat, challenger Ben Webb and incumbent Representative Dan Brady. A new question, 90 seconds each. We've touched on pensions, which currently make up 26% of state spending, but close behind at 23% is Medicaid funding. There's a strong argument that that level and the growth trends of low-income people in Illinois make that unsustainable as well. How should Illinois leaders lead on this issue and reduce the growth rate of Medicaid spending in the near and long term? Representative Brady, you begin.
Charlie, in a couple fronts in regards to Medicaid, I served on the Medicaid Managed Task Force a number of years ago. And unfortunately, a number of those ideas did not see the light of day for a variety of reasons. But I think what is important to focus, since I was just at a meeting that had a number of the stakeholders of healthcare providers here in town, looking at the 1115 waivers and the help from the federal government when it comes to receiving dollars from Medicaid and what the matches can be in Medicare and Medicaid. And I think that is one important thing that we have to partner with the federal government on this. We also have to look at what we are spending, obviously, but who's entitled and what criteria are we truly following? When we tried to scrub a list under the Governor Quinn administration, hundreds of thousands of people who did not meet what the criteria was were receiving Medicaid benefits in this state. Now, that doesn't help the truly needed individuals when others are in spoiling the system. The problem is horrific, and it can only be dealt with some serious reforms.
Ben Webb.
To answer the question on what you do with Medicaid, I don't think you remove 600,000 people from the Medicaid rolls, as was done in the proposed 2017 budget. I think part of what you have to do is you have to expand that base. We have a social safety net for a reason, and I think this is a population asking for a public option. I think it's asking for the public option to actually be at the table as a viable candidate or a viable challenge to public insurance companies as others to make sure we can actually drive costs down. And I know that both of the governor candidates have talked adamantly about this. And I think part of what we need to do is we need to see how we can actually enter this area to start to make that improvement, because you can't start cutting services. We've talked years and years about tightening our belts, and right now, social services groups in our area are feeling the hurt, the same way that higher education is feeling the hurt from cut after cut after cut and a 20-year divestment from higher ed. You see the same thing with medicine.
A follow-up question for you both. It's a slightly different follow-up question, so a one-minute response from both. Representative Brady, your follow-up is that if you remove people from the Medicaid rolls, that doesn't necessarily change the problem for health care. That merely places it on emergency rooms. What are the ways to address that by determining eligibility, or they still need care? So how do you fix that? Ben Webb, your follow-up will be, and a public option is going to require more money. Where does that come from? Representative Brady.
I think, Charlie, if I understand your question correctly, you're talking about the fact of those who are on the rolls of Medicaid in this state. And the care that those individuals receive. The reality is, I think we have to look at from a state government standpoint, we can't be everything to all people. What we have to do is we have to look at those who meet the criteria for our assistance. We have to do a better job of seeing and meeting with those who abuse the system and make it more difficult for those who truly need our help. And the ways that you do that is to take some of the ideas that the Managed Care Task Force presented and implement. You just can't keep saying more taxes, give it to Springfield, they'll do the right thing. I don't believe that is the way, and if you look at history, I don't believe that that has proven to be the way in Springfield.
Ben Webb.
I'd say it's twofold. The first part is you need to see an increase in wages. People are seeing their expenses go up, but they're not seeing their wages go up. And so when we talk about a minimum wage, when we talk about making sure that the minimum wage reflects inflation, we're asking for people to have more spending power, the ability to actually address the fact that in some areas, insurance premiums are hiked to double digits. And there is no power right now in the Department of Insurance to ensure that those hikes are actually valid hikes. And so that's the first piece, is actually making sure that people have that spending power to invest in our economy. But then secondly, making sure that insurance companies and making sure that premiums aren't exorbitantly increased just because times are getting harder.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker, moderating a debate between the candidates for the 105th District State House seat, State Representative Dan Brady and challenger Ben Webb. Scientists have been sounding the alarm on human-caused climate change for decades, from the burning of fossil fuels. Now comes a UN report suggesting they have been optimistic and there is really very little chance to avoid mass extinctions, a rapid evacuation of humans from the tropics, and significant sea level rise. If those things can be avoided, it would require a more significant and rapid reshaping of society and the world economy than has happened in history. Such an effort would also require participation at all levels of government, including state and local. Quite apart from what Congress does, should Illinois do anything about this? If so, what and how fast? And Ben Webb, you start.
It's a very optimistic outlook, I'll say, and the concern that I have is that if we are going to start to make changes, we need to make sure that we treat climate change as the threat that it is, making sure that every individual is playing their part and making sure that that part is played across state lines. We're seeing an agenda from the federal level, which is detrimental and disastrous for our world, because it's not just impacting the United States, it's impacting other countries as well. And so in terms of our ability to get to 100% renewable, I think we need to expedite that process, making sure that everybody has the ability to, as much as possible, I know your signs are green, but we need to go green on this issue to ensure that I had to.
There's a lot of them, too.
There are a lot of them. I can't compete with your signs, buddy. But the one thing I will say is that it needs to be more about every person playing their part, making sure that if you can get a hybrid vehicle, you do so, making sure it's affordable for you to do so, making sure that if you don't have a recycling program in your area, you're doing so. And that needs to be something that's coordinated with state and municipal government to ensure that everybody is, in fact, playing their part. And after the election, making sure they recycle those signs properly.
And Representative Brady, is this something the state should be involved in? How much, how disruptive, and how?
Charlie, I think that the state has a limited role here. I've served as a member of the Green Caucus in Springfield and have looked with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle of a number of issues from the environment that we in state government do or don't play a role in. Last night I was at the Economic Development Council dinner and listening to Rivian and their RJ, their new CEO, that's talking about the electric car. Those type of things, and to be a part of that, are extremely exciting. And I think that whatever we do when it comes to our environment, the state does play a role. The state plays a role from hosting across the state of Illinois the recyclable events, partners with local governments, everything that the state can do. But we get back to what we're talking about earlier when it comes to a budget and the reality of the dollars of where those are going to come from and the priority of what we're at with this particular issue.
We have time for one-minute responses. Ben Webb.
I would say it's becoming even more cost-effective to go green and to make sure that we're doing our part for the environment. I'm extremely pleased that in getting involved in this race, I needed to be able to drive more often. And we switched from a one-car household to a two-car household. And I'm very happy to say that I have an electric vehicle that was cost-effective even on my teacher's salary. And to the point where I can plug in and get from one end of this district to the other, that is perfect. That's one person doing their part. And as we see the technology continue to innovate and as we see this area become a hub for that renewable energy, whether it's harvesting wind or solar, those little steps and that coordination and that negotiation between the state level and the local level would do amazing things in ensuring that there is an earth to hand over to our children.
And your response, Dan Brady.
I'm certainly for having an earth to hand over to our children. Let's go on the record for that. It's nice to have the perspective and talk about some of these issues like this in the environment. But I think there's a role of state government that's limited here under our present constraints. And what I want to do is make sure that the role of state government and what I provide through my district is what the people in my district that I represent want to see me do. And right now, listening to them, there's a number of more significant issues on their mind.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're at University Galleries of Illinois State University with Dan Brady and Ben Webb, candidates for State House in the 105th District. This forum is co-sponsored by GLT and the McLean County League of Women Voters. Small businesses account for much of the economic activity in the state, yet large businesses tend to suck up the oxygen by development folks and lawmakers. What do you think needs to be done to spark small business development in Illinois? And Dan, you're first.
Well, one of the major things, I think, is to keep government off their back. And you don't get small business to get, one, either started or thrive or move into Illinois when you have burdensome regulation that chokes them off, that chokes off the ability for them to grow or get started. From the standpoint of state government and the role of state government, it's what type of incentives and help that we can give them. I mean, we talk about, you know, we can, there's a lot of people want to change the tax structure, okay? Well, let's talk about what's really going to help this revenue side of things in the state of Illinois. It's growth in business, it's manufacturing growth, and people having jobs. You don't do that by continuing to tax them.
And Ben?
In order to make sure that small business, which accounts for so much job growth in this area, part of what we need to see is that we are setting, according to a TED Talk that I show all of my pre-service teachers, we're setting the right seeds of possibility, making sure that the groundwork is ready for businesses to see Illinois politics and say, that's where we want to move. They have well-funded and equitable schools. They have strong universities that are preparing their students for the jobs that we want to see. And you have to lay that groundwork. But when you look at our history, we have not really a history that we're very proud of in terms of Illinois politics, in terms of the last 20 or 14 years, a disastrous turn in terms of how we are, in fact, making sure that we have budgets, making sure that we have stability, and making sure that when we put money towards infrastructure, we aren't actually cutting from what is needed. And so I look to the 2017 proposed budget, which was cutting $85 million from infrastructure. Small business relies upon that infrastructure. We need to make sure we're actually doing something to make sure that they are able to do business in this area.
Are there responses needed?
My response would be to, again, for small business and for business to thrive, government regulation is the number one thing I hear, probably next to workers' compensation reform, that makes it so difficult for them to not only do business in Illinois, but continue to be in Illinois. And from a small business standpoint, the burdensome regulation of any time you make some dollars, you make a profit, the government takes away from you somehow, is not how you're going to continue good job growth and not how you're going to continue jobs.
And Ben Webb.
I think it's a good time to mention the elephant in the room in terms of right to work as well, in terms of infrastructure and improvements and the union jobs that we have in this. That infrastructure that's going to be built by our public workers, these right to work zones that we have, it's a horribly misleading title because it's right to work for less. It's actually looking to how you are lowering safety standards, fatalities increase, wages go down, collective bargaining power goes down as well. And so as much as we are making sure that our businesses want to move here, we have to make sure that all of that groundwork, let's talk about, you know, making sure we're making those improvements. Well, let's actually do those improvements as well. Let's stop making empty promises and actually follow through on those promises.
State funding of higher education at Illinois State University has dropped from 35% of the entire ISU budget in 2002 to about 15% today. ISU is not alone in seeing that shift in support for higher education by the state. Except for ownership of land and buildings and pensions, that's approaching privatization. What is an ideal, aspirational ratio of state support as a percentage of the budget and as a societal good, and what's practically achievable, and how? Ben Webb, you start.
You address part of it, which is our first public university is at that 40% lower overall funding per student. And the thing I would just mention is, as a faculty associate at Illinois State University, I look at all of the votes, and my apologies, Dan, but I look at your votes, and I always get concerned because when it comes to MAP appropriations, 2016, 2014, you're always voting nay. When it comes to higher ed appropriations, which you are on the committee for, it is almost always a nay. And so I want to see higher education be a priority, and I want to see votes that are for our first public university, one that has $500 million in deferred maintenance, because we are going through a budget, we went through a budget impasse, but most of our universities in the system, it was a very difficult time to get through that. We saw furlough days, we saw layoffs, we saw everything in terms of holding positions open for a long period of time, and that does not breed the stability that our university trustees, that our students want to see when they don't know if that money's going to be there. Now, there were some changes to this most recent budget, and I was very happy to see a 2% increase, but I can't celebrate a 2% increase after a 10% cut, after the 2016 year where we had 71% of our funding cut. And so we need to see a change in the way in which we actually are providing this service to our university. Otherwise, we're going to try and tighten the belt and we're going to see universities close. And I don't think anybody wants to see those universities close because they are the best investment on our state's future.
Dan Brady, you have 90 seconds as well.
Thank you. First off, Ben, obviously I take opposition with you and what you just said here. The way in which you mislead not only this audience but anybody listening in regards to my record and what I do for public higher education in this state, in particular for Illinois State University, and my service on the Appropriations Committee. During the first area of the budget impasse, there was a number of us, Democrat and Republicans in higher education, that came together and put the first stopgap budget together that appropriated dollars for these universities, particularly universities in trouble. I worked very diligently to make sure that Illinois State University had a fair amount of appropriation in that stopgap budget, because the formula I saw wasn't fair and was slighted to those individuals that were having more difficulty, okay? But the fact is that Illinois State University, not only from that stopgap budget, but the next stopgap budget, because of my efforts, had more money appropriated to it during the stopgap budgets. I then moved forward to work even harder with my colleagues to make sure that we did have an FY19 budget and that we passed that budget. And in particular for higher education, that there was a 2% increase and an increase in MAP funding as well. I serve right now on a bipartisan group of our own initiatives, looking at not only what we've done for students in the area of grants, of like the AIM High Grant, where we just appropriated $25 million being matched by universities to help those students on grants and making sure that more of our brightest stay in Illinois, to also other areas in which we are looking at for the universities to be able to operate in a funding formula and what other states have done. So, Ben, you know, that's just not fair. It's not accurate, and I have done everything I possibly can, given the environment of being in the minority, I might add, to help Illinois State Universities and every university of our nine state universities.
Okay. 1 minute responses are up for grabs here on the question of what is an appropriate ratio of state funding of higher education as a percentage of the budget and how to get there. Ben, you are first.
And I understand that you're working hard, but I want to see more. And I think our university wants to see more. And I understand that it's not easy being in the minority party. And I understand that it's very difficult when you get to Springfield. But even on MAP funding, 41% of people who are asking for that aren't going to be getting it. And so I know that when I went to a number of different universities over this entire race, I went to five different universities in a week, and you see the distinction between each of the universities and their culture and their climate. ISU might be doing well, but there are other universities who are really working in terms of building new structures, spending more time on making sure that they are a viable option, not only for students who are in this state, but also drawing research students to the university from outside, bringing in international students. And so I want to see more from our state legislature, and I apologize that I have the ability to call you on that, because I'm on the outside or I'm actually in the system. The other thing I would mention on this is I understand you're going to be working hard, but the part that I really want to see is that we should be doing more at Springfield.
Okay. A follow-up for you both, a one-minute follow-up. I'd invite you to discuss the potential for a higher ed funding formula, what it might look like, and how that might affect the ratio of state support for public universities in Illinois. We'll go with the original order, so Ben, you're first on that.
I think the universities would be welcoming of that. I noticed in talking to a couple of faculty as well, they want to see that stability, and they want to know that it's not just based on the previous history. It's based on this is what we got last time, this was the cut, and then this is the new norm. And so I think that funding formula, just like how it's been done at the K-12 area, would be welcomed by that, but they need a seat at the table because education is an investment. It is not something that you see a perfect return on. It's something that you are putting into people. And so the outcomes are going to be different for every single person, whether they're coming from a lower socioeconomic status and they're receiving financial aid, or if they're just going and they're trying to discover what their major is going to be. I've seen legislation which requires students to know what they're going to major in before they get there. And that's just not how schools work. That's not how being a student works. And so I just offer the educator's perspective because I know a number of students are looking at schools in state and they want to stay here at home, but the reality is the draw from outside universities is getting more and more powerful.
And Dan Brady, your 1 minute follow-up answer on a state higher ed funding formula.
Well, there's no doubt that the competition is very competitive for students outside of Illinois and those that come into Illinois to take our students. The reality is what we can do about it. And what we can do about it is the first half of what we just did in our working group, and that was to provide legislation, in particular, the AIM High program, four-year guaranteed MAP funding, priority area in which to receive MAP funding once you have it for the first year, to give stability to those students. Moving on to a funding formula and what the funding formula would look like for higher education in the state of Illinois has to be based on several components. Not only does it have to be based on students attending, it has to be based on graduation rates, it has to be based on retention rates, and it has to be based on overall the financial picture of that university. And that is going to be the most difficult charge of what we're presently in right now in our working group, as we just met a few weeks ago, again, because that is going to spell winners and losers. And if you look at some of the funding formulas that have been used and some of the performance-based funding performance-based fundings in Texas, in Tennessee. There are some things we can learn from there.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org and Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You're listening to a debate at University Galleries between Dan Brady and Ben Webb, both candidates for Illinois House in the 105th District. A fresh question here, 90 seconds. David Donick of Normal asked this question at WGLT.org. What are your solutions to the growing levels of student debt facing students across the country and, of course, here in Illinois? And Dan, you are first.
Number one would be what I was just referring to and from our working group and proposals that we've had. The AIM High legislation and the ability for grant funding. Just today, the University of Illinois at Chicago talked about because of that money they are receiving from the state now, they have a criteria in which they are putting together of actually tuition free for a certain amount of students and a certain criteria in which they have to follow. But the money is flowing to that university to be able to do that as well as our other universities when they match those dollars. That's program number one to help with that. Number two is looking at legislation that I co-sponsored and then legislation I authored, looking at how we make sure that information from that high school student, if they don't get their first choice in Illinois, make sure they're contacted by other schools in Illinois that can show them what they can do from a financial picture so they don't have the debt. And then looking overall to our universities, what they're able to offer, what they're best suited for, and what they can actually offer the student at the most basic price for them to be able to afford. That's how you can try and approach the rising debt for students. But on the other hand, the cost to operate those universities keep going up, and the cost of those individuals who are employees and the payment keeps going up, and the cost of doing business keeps going up. It's a very, very vicious cycle and difficult thing to navigate through, but we've made some headway, and I'm very encouraged.
And Ben Webb, student debt.
I'm happy to see a lot of the work being done by the bipartisan group, and I think there are some Pell Grant opportunities that our universities could work towards actually accommodating and including. I do believe that a student should be able to go to an Illinois university debt-free, and we're seeing local universities, we're seeing U of I move towards that tuition-free system, which is helping those in lower socioeconomic statuses get out of the place that they are in. In terms of lowering the cost of university, it's hard to lower the price because, as Dan mentioned, it is expensive. Higher education is expensive, but it's an investment that if you ask students to make this their home for the 4 years, for the time afterwards, for their graduate studies, and they're willing to invest back into our state, that is an economic boom that we need. I was looking at data from 2014 and before in terms of the loss of students, in terms of the income that they would be putting into our state. That can be $780 million in revenue, but that means we have to keep them here. And we have to make sure we offer them that stability, that MAP grant stability that we're working towards to actually have, so that not only are they here for their freshman year, but they're here for their senior year and the time after college, and they start a family in this area. It's about moving things closer to home by attracting those people to stay and then attracting other people to come here for research and for the advantage.
I'm going to probably lose this bet with myself, as I often do, but I'm going to bet that a response is not going to be desired by either candidate on this question. Dan, it would be yours if you want one.
Well, I think that in talking about the debt side of things, as I alluded to in my previous statement, when you get to the end of the day, my opponent talks about those that have that endorse him, those things that are important from the worker side of things, all those type of things. Well, sure, but those cost money. And when a university tries to operate under systems that have their hand, one hand tied behind their back from a regulation standpoint of what they can do, even down to procurement, it makes it very difficult. That doesn't help the cost of tuition for a student, and doesn't help that student with the debt they're going to have to carry into the future.
And Ben Webb, 1 minute.
In all these proposals, the idea is we're going to need more revenue, and we need to be changing our taxing system. And so I'm going to go back to that progressive tax idea in terms of we need to find new ways of bringing more money into the state. And when it comes down to it, a progressive tax, closing loopholes, legalization of marijuana, all of these options are viable options. But the progressive tax piece, as was already alluded to, that's going to take voters to actually say, we want to see this.
This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media and Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're at the University Galleries of Illinois State University and a candidates forum for the 105th District in the State House. Some education leaders suggest that the traditional high school experience is going to undergo a significant shift over the next several years as workforce development initiatives take kids in increasing numbers out of the classroom and put them in the community in various settings for something that might resemble apprenticeships, tracking into skilled trades, business needs. Do you embrace or reject this vision, and how should the legislature help to accomplishment or respond to it? And Representative Brady, you were first.
I don't necessarily disagree. I don't know exactly, Charlie, where you're getting your information, so I would have to kind of look at that a little bit more and who's saying that.
The Regional Superintendent of Schools, Mark Gentry.
Okay. I didn't hear that the first time. I'm sorry. So I would say that's one person's opinion, and I certainly respect Mark Gentry's opinion. But I think overall, when you look at things that have been done in Springfield recently, in particular, the funding-based formula for K through 12 education, and what was done and what continues to be done and reviewed by a group of that new legislation is very important through K through 12 and getting dollars there and new dollars. And in particular, some of those dollars are directed at some of the things that you refer to when you talk about programs outside of the school, apprentice programs or other programs from an education standpoint. So the change of what the high schools are going to look like and how they're going to operate and what the students are going to do is something we're all going to have to embrace. And I think we're doing that in a good way by changing the funding formula when we talk through K through 12.
Ben Webb.
I take this very personally in terms of my classroom should not be the only learning space that my students experience life through. I just started teaching Shakespeare this week, and for many of my students, they are either loving it or they are hating it. And outside of the classroom, they can really see more opportunities, whether it's an apprenticeship or a trade. Some of the best life lessons that I get to teach in my role as a teacher are not just in that literature class. It's what I do when I'm teaching students how to use power tools and build for the sets that we do in the theater program. It's outside of that classroom, and expanding that role outside of a building that, let's just be frank, a lot of our buildings look like prisons from the outside or from the inside. addressing that a student needs to be taught holistically. It's not just math, science, English. There's more to be learned in a classroom, and especially as we look to expand the classroom outside of that, those apprenticeships, those connections to the community, that's going to create some better buy-in so that that individual sees that while university is important, as a university education may be the track that they want to take, there are many opportunities outside of that, and we can actually do some major changes in terms of looking at, well, maybe I don't want to go into Shakespearean literature as my major in college. Maybe I want to look at a trade. Maybe I want to be a plumber and pipe fitter. Maybe I want to be a carpenter. And it's expanding the world and the opportunities that they have available to them.
That perspective of whether it's a prison or not largely depends on whether you're a senior, I guess. 1 minute responses, Dan.
I think that when you look at what's done right here in this community through District 87 and the alternative schools, and you look at the trade schools in which that they have that draws from the area, those are all important. And I think being able to be part of a funding picture to help that is important. But any type of experience that can be out of the classroom can be beneficial for a student. We have students in my office, whether they're college, whether they are high school, and they have the ability to see the operations and what we do or what I do firsthand. And that's, I think, very valuable experience for them.
And Ben Webb.
The only addendum that I would put on to this discussion is that we're addressing that students are diverse. They have a wealth of opportunities available to them, and they need to be given those opportunities or at least make sure that those are available to them. In this area, we are very fortunate to have some very strong schools, to have a variety of different types of schools, but that's not true across the state. Growing up in Rockford, the school districts up there are extremely different, and so changing the funding model, making sure that we are giving those opportunities is a step in the right direction. It's really important that we're starting to do that. And the other thing I'd point to is that my entire life I've been told by politicians what is best practice, and yet I went to school for this. I have a level of expertise, as do all of my colleagues. I would like to see a legislature that really starts to appreciate the expertise of the people who are going to be working with that legislation firsthand on a day-to-day basis, whether that's in education, whether that's in business. It's really about moving that power back to the people who are the experts and know what is best practice.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You're listening to A Candidate's Debate on Bloomington Normal's public media. Nationwide buying power of the gas tax has fallen sharply after inflation. State motor fuel tax funding to cities and counties has also fallen as those revenues have eroded. McLean County has suggested the state allow a county-level motor fuel tax to allow a better local road repair. How do you see the pros and cons of this issue? And Ben Webb, you are first.
I would say including a gas tax is a little bit dangerous, but it's also making me very happy that I have an electric car. And just the idea that I'm going to be, I understand why we have this type of tax in other areas. I understand why we have a toll system. We have to make sure we're paying for our roads and our infrastructure. My concern is that it should be a motivator to change the system. It should be a motivator to, in fact, alter how we do business, but not where we're putting something in your car that then is tracking how much mileage you have and then sending you the bill for it. I've seen some innovations in terms of like iPass. It was one of the first LMI policy things that I noticed when I was young, and I also was like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. We have that. But beyond that, I think that it's going to make for more problems down the line, and I think we can find other routes of making sure that our infrastructure is fully funded.
Dan Brady.
like so many things in state government, the growth of an agency or department, the Illinois Tollway Authority in this case, and what it takes to operate, what was once thought of the Tollway Pass when it first came out was probably a very good idea. But the growth of what it does to feed government and to expand is where I'm very concerned of. When you talk about already moving on top of what is one of the highest gas tax in the state of Illinois, another percentage of that from a local side of things, I'm reluctant to endorse something like that. I do think from a capital standpoint, I hope that we continue our discussions on capital. The state needs a capital budget. But I think there also is a role for what's been done in gaming and the expansion of gaming and what the percentages could be of that type of tax coming into a capital bill that helps with our infrastructure of our roads and bridges in particular across the state.
We have 1 minute responses on the issue of a county level motor fuel tax. Ben Webb.
The only additional piece that I would put out is it gives a great motivator for the discussion of how we actually are reinforcing public transportation. I've been very fortunate to be able to take students overseas, and they are just wowed by the public transportation that other countries have. And we're doing pretty well in town right here, but that does not speak true of the entire 105th district. And so it really should offer the opportunity where we start to say, here's the problem. Let's not create a tangential problem in the process. Let's try to go to the heart of what we want to see. Better roads and better public transportation in this area. Do we want to see high-speed rail? Do we want to see innovation rather than stopgaps or stepping stones?
And Dan?
I would say that, you know, the last capital bill that we had over 9 years ago was a $29 billion capital bill. At that time, that particular capital bill was woefully inadequate because of the cost that continues to go up when it comes to capital, in particular to shift things back to not only the road, but all of our infrastructure with our buildings and our needs right here at Illinois State University and the ability that they have capital that's coming out of the present FY19 budget to help with emergency appropriations on a couple of the buildings. And over $61 million is going to be directed towards the College of Fine Arts. The whole thing is, how do you pay for it and where does it come from? And I've offered some suggestions in which that we may be able to find common ground from a Democrat and Republican legislature, being in the minority, that's something that I always look for, to try and work with the majority on issues such as this that are very important in the 105th district, and I've got a track record to prove it.
What will you do to improve bipartisan relations in the House after the last several years of contention, driven in part by the governor and driven in part by House and Senate leadership? And I believe we're going with Representative Brady first.
One of the things that can be done is, from a rank-and-file standpoint, a rank-and-file legislature. As I mentioned earlier, from a rank-and-file legislature, we are the ones that drove the budget. We are the ones that in the budget impasse drove to get stopgap budgets. We are the ones that went to the leaders, the speaker, and the governor, and told them, these are our ideas, and these are the plans we want to implement to try and help this impasse and try and help you. From a legislative standpoint, from a legislation standpoint, I've reached across the aisle numerous times. And being in the minority, you learn this, and sometimes you learn it maybe the hard way. But to get something done in the 105th district, I have to work in a bipartisan way in which I have. I think that the legislature is very hungry for environment of politics to change, and I think left up to the rank and file, it will continue to change. But make no mistake about it, the majority party has been that majority party for quite a lengthy time, and they're the one that are the conductors of the train.
And Ben Webb.
And I think, to just use the same term, I think the people of the 105th district are hungry for change. They're hungry for seeing politics that are better. And despite a lot of bipartisan support and a lot of push in a bipartisan way, we're also seeing how the national dialogue in politics, which has gotten more and more aggressive and nasty is moving down to the state level because of a lack of movement from Congress and from that national level of politics. But I also think that there's a need for new blood. There's a need for independence from the existing structures. And I think part of that means you have a number of first-time candidates who are saying, I've seen enough. I want to step up. I think I can do more. And we've seen that especially in this town. People stepping up for the first time saying, I was not political before, but I've realized I cannot just stay on the sidelines. I need to get involved. I need to lobby my representative. I need to try and push for change. And what's creating is a much more interactive and could be a much more positive experience because we are actively engaged. We're actively holding our representatives accountable for their votes, for their choices, and for their words. And so I think new blood is part of the solution to this problem because we have an existing structure that has created some long-standing, actually a history of problems.
And a one-minute follow-up to each of you. Please give an example of how you've compromised in a way you found distasteful but necessary for the state. That's for you, Dan, and for Ben. Identify an area you will be willing to compromise on if elected, and mention something that you know Republicans really want that you really don't want as a way to go about that. And Dan, you're first.
I think, Charlie, that one of the ways that the compromise side of things that may have been distasteful is in my negotiations of workers' compensation and telling the administration that I thought that from the Democratic side, we had a pretty good compromise worked out in some of the areas of workers' comp. It did not meet with their approval, but I stood up and I told them what I thought, and I thought that it was important for the businesses across the state of Illinois that we take what had been offered and that we worked on in the negotiation side of things. I think that's one part of standing up and when things may be distasteful. The other would probably be distasteful to say that the budget that we have, in particular through K through 12 education and the evidence-based funding formula, that it's not perfect, I know that. And some of the deals that had to be worked out that I would believe would be better to have had the focus on public education, which is the state's responsibility. There were other things in there that I had to be part of to say, let's get it, to get a budget, it's more important.
And Ben Webb.
And I guess I have a glass half full perspective because I'm not in the assembly yet. I would say the two places where I won't be able to curb would be education, more specifically special education. It's very near and dear to my heart, and it's something I think you cannot make cuts or curb corners or change the trajectory of. You need to make sure you're fully funding it. On the area where I think I would have to curb and find a way to compromise, it's my expertise is limited. When it comes to my education background, when it comes to public policy, that is where I'm willing to be a teacher and learner first and foremost. And I know I'm going to have to reach out to Republicans who are going to tell me that they know better, and I better be willing to listen because they'll have the history. They'll have the longstanding time where they can say, this is what we tried last time. And so especially when it comes to votes on infrastructure, I don't know anything about roads. I don't. I wish I did. But I think that's where I can really speak to the experts in the room, gain their perspective, and then make a decision that is best for this area and for the state.
And that response brings us to the end of the question period of the forum and to closing statements. And due to a timing error on my part, please limit your closing comments to about a minute. And we'll go with Dan Brady, who started a second. He will go last first.
Thank you very much, Charlie, and thank you for cutting my time. thanks to again to all who made this forum possible. And I simply want to say that our ideas are important to each of us and the people that we represent in the 105th District, especially in my case. A constituent wrote me recently a letter asking for help for his disabled daughter. He wrote, I'm grateful for your service and courage to continue serving in this extremely negative political climate. Rather than running from the problems, you've chosen to engage and advocate for solutions. I do that on a daily basis. We can talk policy, and we have. We can differ on policy, and we do. But my constituent service, my dedication to the people of the 105th District, and my ability to work on their behalf in Springfield and back in the district is unmatched, and I'll continue to do so if they give me the privilege to serve them again. And I ask for your vote. Thank you.
And Ben Webb, 1 minute, please.
And thank you again. Thank you to WGLT and Legal Women Voters for hosting this forum. Again, my name is Ben Webb, and I'm proud to be running and working to earn your vote this November as your next representative in this 105th district. I've entered the race to ensure that voters have a choice this midterm and a choice for change after almost two decades of incumbency. I think we need a change. And as a teacher, I have seen how the dysfunction and the political gridlock in Springfield has jeopardized our students' futures. With a 20-year divestment in higher education, politicizing K-12 education rather than prioritizing it as a state investment, I'd like us to see us do more. I'm pleased to have run a campaign without any intervention of a party establishment independently, and I'm pleased to provide an educator's perspective to the problems which face our state. When it comes to supporting unions, working class people, collective labor, advancing legislation which ensure the wealthiest residents pay a fair share, I think I'm the right candidate. And I humbly ask for your vote this November because you will be pleased to see that you have two choices on the ballot this November.
Thank you, candidates, for participating in this on-location edition of Sound Ideas and 105th District State House candidate debate, co-sponsored with the McLean County League of Women Voters and GLT. Thanks to Illinois State University Galleries for providing the venue for this event. November 6th is the election. Go and vote. Early voting is going on now. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is WGLT Normal.